Let us pause. Oh God, we thank you for your word, whether it's from the Gospels or from the Epistles, whether it's from the Psalms or prophets in the Old Testament, we give you thanks, for we know and we trust that your word is sufficient for us. We thank you how it guides us and leads us and gives us wisdom and how it helps us in our daily living. So may all that we say and do be glorifying to you. O God, our strength and our Redeemer. Amen. I rarely talk about the Psalms. Psalms has a lot of references to God's actions over the decades, over the centuries. And it starts from the beginning, mentions Abraham, Moses, and goes through even David and beyond. And today, the psalm that I'm talking about is Psalm 66, and it does have a reference to the Exodus, and it's implied Moses, the leader. In verse 6, it talks about God turning the sea into dry land and how the people passed through the river on foot. And then it says in verse 12 how they went through the fire, how they went through the water. And even though Moses isn't mentioned, he is implied. Let's take a flashback to Moses, and let me summarize a little bit about him. I'm sure you remember his story, how he was adopted into Israel in a basket. He was floating down the river, and then so he lived a life of privilege as he was adopted. He grew to like that life of privilege, and then God said, well, it's time to go back to your roots. And so he returned to Israel and he discovered a lot of his past and his life. And eventually the people of Israel suffered under Pharaoh in Egypt. And so God said, okay, you're the leader and you're gonna lead them out of bondage and slavery. You have to perform signs and miracles and go through this difficult time. So he did lead them out. And the people of Israel, they were uprooted. And they lost everything. They lost their homes. They lost their job. They lost all the institutions. They lost all the conveniences and the structure of their lives. And for 40 years, they wandered into the desert, and it was barren. They were harsh living. They were thirsty. They were hungry. At times, they were deprived, and then they were bitten by serpents, and it's just a very difficult way of life. They struggled and they suffered, and pretty soon they got tired of this life and they said, Moses, it's your fault. Why did you convince Pharaoh to let us go? Why did you force us to leave Egypt when we were comfortable, where we had good food? We had cucumbers and leeks, and we had things available to us. And so they cursed Moses, they cursed God, and they backpedaled, and they were backsliding in their hearts, and they said, if we could only go back to Egypt, that would be the way. Because they felt God had abandoned them. They felt like their leader had betrayed them, and they faced death. And then remember, Moses goes up to Mount Sinai and gets the Ten Commandments, and then the people get restless, and they build this golden calf, and then fire and brimstone comes down. And they go through battles and struggles with invaders and foreigners. They went through a lot with Moses, 40 years, and even leading up to that. So 40 years plus. But that's who they are. That's part of their being. That's part of their identity. They remember the time of Moses. They remember the Exodus. They remember passing to the Red Sea. It's part of their collective consciousness now. It's something that they cannot just forget or let go of. As your leader, how long have I been with you? 8 years. I've seen, we've been through a lot together. Nothing like what Israel and Moses went through. But there were some difficult times. There are struggling times. There are some good times. I'm looking at the youth here, and I remember the times of when they were little and then growing up with them, watching them grow up and going through different experiences with them. Let me summarize what happened in our 8 years together. What happened with the staff? Remember when I first came, there was Mark Sturgis, and we were overlapping 2 years. But then he went to take his own church. And then came Chris Carter and John Tarman, and they're creative, and they're energetic, and they were uniquely gifted. But then they went to take on their own church. And then there was Andy O'Quinn, and he was here for a brief moment, and then he took his own church. The choir, they had Arwin Hernandez and John Park, and then they moved on, and then we lost Bob Grazier. If we think back to all those times with the different staff people we had, emotionally, it was a lot. There was joy and laughter, but sadness and grief, because just like we feel like we're getting to know people and we're starting to bond with them, we're starting to attach to them, and then we hear news that they're leaving, and then we have to separate and we have to detach and we get sad. It's like this revolving door of staff people that came in and out of this church, and then it was a roller coaster. There were some highs and then some lows and losses. And then in that time, there was a sanctuary renovation. I remember when it was night church, and then night church took a break. And then it was a time to unite and risk and build, and we made pledges, and we took the risk, and we signed onto this contract with these builders and also with the loan. And it was our big cookbook fundraiser. But it was unsettling because the front was jackhammered and all the pews were taken out and the floor was dug up and it was a mess. It was unsettling. And we worshiped in the social hall for a little over 6 months. But we plowed through the holidays in the social hall. It's kind of sad too, because night church took a longer break than expected, and then the relaunch and how all of that came about. When we came back into the sanctuary, there's a lot of scuffles. There are arguments about, well, where should the piano be? Should it be over here? Should it be over there? Should it be in the middle? Then the rest of the furniture, how are we going to set things up? And then we went through arguments and debates and conflicts over, okay, there's going to be 3 services and who gets to go when and what time. And it was tumultuous. It was conflict and stressful. And then add to the situation all the financial questions. There are people who start to doubt and say, well, I have questions about your finances and about the organ and about the loan. And there's fear, there's suspicion, there's lack of trust. People started to pass away, and then people moved away. And we felt sad and grief for those who died. But then people who decided, I'm going to move away. And then that caused confusion, that caused anger, that caused sadness. And then we felt like we lost our confidence. We lost our focus. We were lost for a while. We were anxious and we were worried and feel overwhelmed. And some people were so panicked about the finances and in desperation, and all those feelings got funneled up to the leaders, and the leaders felt it. But somehow there was news that, oh, now the pastor is in a new relationship. The temperature went down a little bit. People got excited a little bit. There was the dating, the romance, and then the wedding. And all of a sudden, the church was back together again, unified in a different way. And Marlou came into the picture, and there was happiness, there was energy, there was a new spirit and hope and peace and prosperity, which brings us to where we are now. Interesting thing about Psalms is that the writer, when he wrote it, he wasn't there. He wasn't there in Egypt. He wasn't there wandering in the wilderness. He wasn't there when they went through all that period for 40 years. But he wrote the Psalms after all that had happened. So for him, then, the salvation history, God's activity was there throughout. And this, even though he wasn't there, he feels that the saving actions of God is still in his mind. It's still in his soul. He had to write about it. He did not write about the times, though, that during the times in the wilderness, if you remember, they were mad at Moses. They blamed him. It was his fault. Why did he convince Pharaoh to let them go? Why did he force us to leave? We wouldn't be in this hell if it wasn't for him. People complained. People were quarreling, and people were in a bad mood. But when you read the Psalms, you don't see any of that. Why is that? Because the people must have forgotten it, or the people must have forgiven him. They must have thanked him. Because when you look at the whole picture, the whole story, the whole trajectory of things, it wasn't about Moses anyway. It was about God. It was about what God was doing. It says in verse 5, come and see the works that God is doing and God's awesome deeds. He turns sea into dry land. He ruled by might. He keeps his watch over the nations. He keeps us in life and he doesn't let our feet slip. God tries us and refines us like silver, even though we're brought into the net, even though we feel the burdens upon us. It is still God who is a major character in the story, who is ushering the group, the people, the nation along the way. And the leader is just an agent or an instrument or small part. But it's about what God's mighty moves are. So when I leave, I hope if you're irritated at me, if you're angry at me, if you're annoyed at me, somehow you forget about that. That if through some decision or some action that I made or that we made that was hurtful or that was wounding, that you can forgive that and that you can forget about that. And in the same way, I can too. If there are times where I felt like I was unfairly treated or talked about or something happened, that I will forget about that and forgive that part. And looking at the big picture, then we focus on God, what God is doing in the whole scheme of things. God is using the leader in spite of the mistakes. God is using the leader in spite of the misunderstandings or the mishaps. And it's about God's story and what God is doing through and through in this place. I like in verse 12 where it says that, yet God brought us to a spacious place. After all that had happened in Israel's situation, after being uprooted and going through the Red Sea and wandering in the wilderness, after all that, God is now bringing them to a spacious place. Going through the trial and tribulation, the isolation, desperation, through all the difficulty and adversity and the hunger and thirst and the anxiety and worry and fear and panic. Through all the changes, through all the transitions, through all the emotions, all the perfect storm of all converging, through all that, God still is bringing us to a new space, an open, spacious place. God is bringing you, God is bringing me to a new space. A new space where new things can happen, where new life can be born, where new seeds can sprout up, where there's a clearing of the old hindrances so we can let go of those hindrances and open up to a new horizon which God is opening to us. New possibilities, new leaders, new community, new energy, new opportunity, new reality. There's something to be excited about, something to look forward to. And so we ask ourselves, well, how do we respond then? And the psalmist says this in verse 13, I will come into your house, O God, with burnt offerings. I will pay my vows and come and hear all you who worship God, and I will tell you what God has done. For God is highly to be praised, and blessed be God who has not rejected my prayers and who has not removed the steadfast love. So as we're moving to a new space, to a spacious place, the response is praise. The response is thanksgiving. The response is worship. So let's respond with renewed hope. And let us welcome this new space that we're going into spiritually and emotionally with a new leader. As a new leader will go with you through the highs and lows and the ups and downs and the discoveries. And let's get excited about it, the new place that God has for us. Amen.